In the gathering dawn of the new administration, another important cog has been put into place, Marine Corps General James Mad Dog Mattis, a highly celebrated, much beloved by his troops, cerebral and urbane man who cares deeply for all those underneath him. Mattis is exactly the kind of out-of-the-box thinker that America needs now in this highly unconventional war on terror era. Meanwhile, a very unusual super cold front is working its way down from Alaska and will be hitting the West Coast soon. A little bit after that, the entire country will be enveloped by this very cold capsule. Interestingly enough, this cold front symbolizes the reaction of far leftists to the Trump presidency, fighting at every turn after thinking they had a cakewalk with Hillary into the White House. The shocked, scorned, infuriated, and highly indignant leftists are now determined to ruin Trump's presidency. But isn't that always their way? Nobody has legitimacy except their own chosen. Parts of this rage liberal against Trump and democracy itself are expressed in the riots, the attack by the media, and the battle with the Electoral College, and now the supposed war against fake news. But a deeper aspect is illustrated by the progressive war against reality itself. With Barack, our national hospice maitre d', leading the charge against progress and anything American, he stated we could not drill our way out of an energy crisis, while under his feet, we were actually drilling our way out of it. He claimed Trump could not save Carrier when the Donald achieves this even before entering office. This is the fruit of leadership. Meanwhile, Obama's dereliction of duty approach to immigration is hemorrhaging and causing misery across the United States. Meanwhile, failed socialist Francois Hollande of France refuses to go after re-election, but at 5% approval, can you blame him? And isn't this always the way of the socialist? Failure after failure and propaganda machines running 24/7, 365? The coming months and years will reveal whether we can regain what was squandered, rejected, and simply abandoned by the mindless leftism, far leftism of the far left Democrats. While the crazed Marxist Harry Reid exits screaming his accusations, their members freely admit they have no plan or path back to power. But then again, their recent reelection of petrified socialist Nancy Pelosi of the pass this legislation, then read it, read its contents fame, is everything you need to know about their method and future prospects. Good morning. 609 Kelly here. I hope you're doing well. A little chilly outside. Let me see what the... what my weather is saying here, 33 degrees. So let us get to a little Mad Dog Mattis. And this is a pretty good announcement. Check this out. What a great way to make the announcement. And they've got to pass a law that allows Mattis to serve in this position, but check it out. And they're working on it right now.
We are going to appoint Mad Dog Mattis as our Secretary of Defense. But we're not announcing it till Monday, so don't tell anybody. Mad Dog. He's great. He is great. I asked one of the generals. I love the generals. And I won't use his name, but he probably would come forward. But I said to him, you're a good general, aren't you? Yes, sir, I am. I said, so how do you compare to General Mattis? How do you compare to Mad Dog? Sir, he's better than I am. I loved it. I said, I love you to say that. They love him. So we're going to be announcing him on Monday of next week. Keep it inside the room. But that's what we have, and he's our best. They say he's the closest thing to General George Patton that we have, and it's about time. It's about time.
All right, there is the announcement. Now, here's a little bit more about the Congress having to pass legislation so that Mattis can get in here. It's kind of exciting, though. It's very, very rare you see the very best person for a job actually chosen for it. And here is Congress must pass new legislation for Mattis approval.
Let's find out who General Mattis is. National Security Correspondent Jennifer Griffin is at the Pentagon tonight. Good evening, Jennifer.
Good evening, Brett. Well, when I was on Capitol Hill earlier this week, I learned that Republicans on both the House and Senate Armed Services Committees had taken steps to write up legislation allowing them to make an exception and bypass a law that bars military personnel from serving as defense secretary within 7 years of retirement. It would be a one-time law mentioning General Mattis by name. Chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Congressman Mac Thornberry, told us just a short time ago that Mattis has tremendous support on the Hill.
We have a draft of language that we have prepared based on the same language that was used for General Marshall back in the Truman administration. So that's our starting point. There may be some tweaks to it, but we're pretty much ready to go with that here in the House.
Neither the Trump transition team nor General Mattis himself will confirm that a decision has been made. General Jim Mattis's last job was that of CENTCOM commander before he retired 3 years ago. He oversaw relations with 20 countries. Before that, he served for 3 years as the Supreme Allied Commander for Transformation of NATO. I'm told he doesn't like being called Mad Dog unless you are one of his young Marines who gave him that nickname. During the invasion of Iraq, his call sign was Chaos. He also led Marines into Fallujah and led a Marine amphibious task force into Afghanistan after 9/11.
You go into Afghanistan, you got guys who slapped women around for 5 years because they didn't wear a veil. You know, guys like that ain't got no manhood left anyway, so it's a hell of a lot of fun to shoot them. You know, I mean, it's a good fight.
When he met with President-elect Trump, General Mattis reportedly told him he does not like waterboarding because, frankly, it doesn't work. I'm told by a well-placed source he was not told about the Cuba negotiations or Iran deal when he served under the Obama administration. Even though Iran was one of the countries for which he was responsible, General Mattis was forced to retire 3 months early because he saw Iran as a greater strategic threat than others in the administration, Brett.
You know, Joe, I'm told by Marines who know him, obviously he's blunt spoken, straightforward, and as you mentioned in your report, but there's also this other side to him. After he retired in 2013, he got in a car and crisscrossed the country to try to personally visit as many of the families of Marines who died under his command as he could over a 2.5 week drive across the country. And he wrote a handwritten letter to every parent who lost a son or daughter under his command. So you don't often hear that story.
Well, that's the kind of guy he is, and already morale here in the building upon hearing that he might be the commander, the defense secretary here, it's already rising. As CENTCOM commander, he made it a point to stop in Tonga, of all places, to thank them because they had the largest number of security guards guarding the green zone in Iraq. He also made it to Estonia. He made that a priority because Estonia lost more troops per capita than any other country in Afghanistan. Brett, that's the kind of guy he is.
All right, more on this with the panel. Jennifer, thank you.
And here is just a little bit more on this new legislation.
Level.
New legislation that they've got to pass here. But it is exciting. This guy is going to know how to fight. And again, this is from Fox News.
Out who General Mattis is, National Security Correspondent.
Well, actually, we just played that clip. So in any event, there's a little analysis from CNN on Mattis.
I have covered General Mattis for many, many years. One of the most plain-spoken, blunt generals out there. Do not expect him to revisit the Trump campaign. Don't expect him to get involved in politics. Of what has happened over the last 2 years, expect Jim Mattis to look forward very rapidly when he gets to the Pentagon. He will have many challenges. He will have to deal with the fight against ISIS, the upcoming fight to retake Raqqa in Syria with Russian advances. He will be a key point man to deal with Russia's advances in Eastern Europe and in the Middle East. Can he trust Vladimir Putin? What advice will he give Donald Trump on Putin? And he will be the defense secretary that may have to confront and deal with the North Korean nuclear situation very quickly. We know that North Korea, even as we stand here, is working on its underground tunnels again for a potential additional nuclear test. These are the kinds of things that Jim Mattis is walking into. He will be a secretary of defense that will be looking to deal with all of this, not to get mired down in the political fights of the last 2 years. But here's the big question. He will also, for the first time, have to deal with the mundane day-to-day business of running one of the world's largest bureaucracies, budget, acquisition, science and technology. It is a huge portfolio. Can he do it? Absolutely. I don't think there's a question about it. But it will be interesting to see what he
All right, so I think one of the debates that's going to consume a lot of the people, well, I guess it remains to be seen whether it consumes anybody, but one of the debates that comes to mind in the future is over whether Obama cared about America and what his plans were for America, why he did the things that he did. For example, why would he trash the possibility of keeping Carrier when Trump is able to do it before he can even get into office, which is kind of a remarkable achievement. And there is a guy that is involved in a website called The Young Turks, Cenk Unger, however you pronounce his name. And one of the things that he said is that Obama would have not even tried. That's something that I said the other day as well. Obama would not have tried to save Carrier because that's not in his mind. It's not in his mind because he doesn't want there to be, I guess, I don't know what else you can say about it other than he didn't want it, didn't fit into his plans for America to have a economic renaissance. But here is what Obama said about the chance of saving Carrier by Donald Trump. And this is from June 2016. So between June 2016 and now, what did Obama do to save Carrier? I think the obvious conclusion to draw is not only did he do anything, but he didn't want to do anything. Check this out.
But for those folks who've lost their job right now because a plant went down to Mexico, you know, that isn't going to make you feel better. And so what we have to do is to make sure that folks are trained for the jobs that are coming in now, because some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back. And when somebody says, like the person you just mentioned, who I'm not going to advertise for, that he's going to bring all these jobs back, well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do? There's no answer to it. He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how exactly are you going to negotiate that? What magic wand do you have? And usually the answer is he doesn't have an answer. So
who doesn't have an answer here? What did Obama think he was gaining by getting involved in this? What I call being a maitre d' at a hospice. You know, what's a hospice for? It's a place that people go to die, right? Obama was the national hospice maitre d'. He was going to introduce us to the fact that you couldn't fight off this direction that we were headed, and it was inevitable. And he was going to be this guy with the big smile and the confident manner and the jokes who was going to get us to accept that there's a diminished future for America. Here he is at work again.
Now, if there's one thing I know about New Hampshire, it's that your political bull detector is pretty keen. It's pretty sharp. You know that we can't just drill our way to lower gas prices.
Fuel prices have reached a new low.
That we can't just drill our way to lower gas prices.
This is 2012, by the way, and that we became the world's number one producer of gas and oil last year.
Taking a look at your gas prices this morning, I feel like a broken record. We keep saying how gas prices continue to fall. We're seeing this nationwide, and we're seeing it here in Phoenix.
Your political bull detector is pretty keen.
I mean, it's sad, isn't it? A person who spends their time plotting how to persuade people into accepting the idea that your best days are behind us. You know, think about that. You've got a chance to lead the greatest country in the history of the world, and your ambition is to get the people there to understand that you can't have a high opinion of yourself anymore, and you're not that great, and your achievements have been overstated, and that you have to accept all of these immigrants that come into your country and radically change it from the ground up. I've got a little story on that in a minute. But here's Cenk Uygur, whatever his name is, from Young Turks.
I got to record this from an airport because I pretty much live at these places. I'm going to San Francisco today. But I saw a news story that was very important this morning, and I wanted to share it with you guys right away. So credit where credit is due. Donald Trump scores a big victory today. He got Carrier, that company in Indiana that makes furnaces and air conditioners, to keep 1,000 jobs in Indiana instead of moving them to Mexico. Now, devil's in the details, but here you've got upside and downside. So I'm not unaware of the deals that he had to make to get that deal done. So, for example, one of the things that they included in that deal for the company was tax inducements. So what does that mean? That means that likely that company will get tremendous giveaways from the U.S. government. So Trump talked a big game about how he was going to, you know, bully these companies and threaten tariffs and stuff. Instead, in this deal, it appears that they say that they're going to back off the tariff talk and instead give the company tax cuts. So I get it. I get the downside of it. But now let's talk about one of the things he did in there that was actually really positive. He said, look, your parent company is United Technologies, and it has a lot of government contracts. Now, if you want to get United States government contracts, then you're going to have to keep some of your jobs in the United States. Now, this is exactly what I've been saying to Democrats and President Obama, that you could do this stuff, that if you really wanted to apply pressure, there's 1,000 different ways to apply pressure, but they would never do it. I'm sorry, if you're a Democrat and you like Obama, I hate to break your heart and you want to hate me for it, that's fine. But Obama wouldn't have done that. He just, that's not who he is. He's not that guy. And in this case, it's an absolute fact, because Obama's president right now. If he wanted, he could have pressured Carrier, but he didn't pressure Carrier. He didn't pressure United Technologies, and he didn't threaten to take away their government contracts, because he's not that strong. And he always thinks his default mode is, oh, there's nothing we could do. Oh, there's nothing we could do. Oh, no, 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 no. You guys don't understand. There are consequences to that. No, I do understand. What I'm asking you to do is risk those consequences to protect American workers. And you didn't do it. And now Trump did it. Now he's going to get a world of credit. And I'm the only one who's going to tell you about the downsides of that deal.
All right. So whether there's a downside or not, putting the mind into the mind of these business leaders that there's something to be gained by staying here. Think about this. You're considering you're a CEO, a CFO, whatever, and you've got a company and you realize it would be cheaper to produce in Mexico or China or wherever, India. And then you see that the government is starting to do things to change the tax rate, maybe amortization, which is the rule that allows you to mark down the worth of your assets as time goes by, as they depreciate, that you're going to that the government is knocking down corporate tax rates. That alone is going to make these businesses think twice, because, I mean, it's obviously more convenient to create the things that you sell in your own country, inside your own country. Anyway, Obama, the national maitre d' of the American hospice, tragic, heartbreaking. If you have a failed vision when you begin, you cannot achieve success. And that has been the story of Obama since day one. 6:31 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450. You're listening to KOBE with Kelly O'Connell. It's about 35 degrees outside. We'll be right back. All right, I've got a kind of an amazing story that you're probably not going to believe, but I'll tell you about it. They are bringing to America a group of people that were from the top immigration sites, the top hotspots for, say, jihad, nearly 2,500 refugees from terrorism hotspots around the world, are bound for the United States right now after being rejected by Australia, but not even the top lawmakers in America can get answers about who they are. And in an unprecedented move, the U.S. State Department has classified details and refugees to be resettled in America via a secret deal made with Australia. The bilateral agreement, which Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull called a one-off, involves 2,465 people currently being held in Papua New Guinea and Nauru, who will be transferred onto U.S. soil. It's a backroom deal, a wheeling and dealing with another country's refugees problem, Center for Immigration Studies fellow Don Barnett told Fox News. I don't believe for a moment it's a one-time deal. That's for public consumption. All right, so you've got these people coming over here, and, you know, the president, who pretends that he really cares about America. I mean, why did this guy run for office? Seriously, serious question. Put aside all of the Obama bashing for a minute and such. How many decisions that he has made have been beneficial to America? How could it possibly benefit America to take in a large number of refugees from the worst hotspots for terrorism around the globe, right? Now, add to that this story here from Fox, breaking news, Islamist group in U.S. reportedly arming for confrontation with Trump administration. Check it out.
Islamist group with secretive compounds in parts of the country. One of them is known as Islamaburg. It's in upstate New York. Well, they are collecting weapons. They say they're anticipating raids by the incoming Trump administration. Judge Napolitano is with us. Not doing anything wrong, are they?
Well, if they are complying with New York state law, which requires a permit to
purchase and own, and then a second permit to carry weapons. We're talking about sidearms. Rifles are entirely different. Then they're not breaking the law. It does seem a little creepy,
as if they
are preparing to resist the government with arms.
Well, we have information that they're training in kind of tactics that would let you think that way.
I'm not happy with it, but you're right. So far, it does not appear that they're violating the law. I don't know what they're preparing for. Are they here illegally that they expect to be deported against their will and they will resist the deporters with arms? Well, then you have a very serious issue on your hands.
Would the authorities be on decent legal grounds to arrive with a search warrant and say, we got a few questions to ask about your arms that you're bearing, so to speak? Would that be okay?
It would depend upon what they told the judge who issued the search warrant. The Constitution, your friend, the Constitution, requires that they show probable cause, which means some evidence of criminal activity, not suspicion, not worry, but crimes.
Can't just check up on the firearms permit?
No, in Great Britain they can do that.
Yes, they can.
Not here.
Yes, they can.
All right, so they've got this place called Holy Islamburg. It's 150 miles northwest of New York City in the Catskills. And these people are gathering weapons, they're training, using them, and it's a little bit scary. The upshot on that is that if you're going to, if you're going to do something like that, I would assume they're doing it because they want to use the weapons, right? So anyway, let's take a little break here, and we'll come back and finish up this hour in just a minute. But a lot of weird things going on out there. But the president is trying to bring 2,500 people in from the worst hotspots. Too dangerous for Australia to accept, but we have to accept them. The president's not telling anybody who's there. The highest levels of the U.S. government are not allowed to know about it. That's the kind of thing that has upset people. These kind of the lying, the falsification, the hiding information from Americans. And how many people still believe that Obama cares about the United States? I'm curious. 642 Kelly O'Connell, AM Los Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in. Well, friends with the fancy persuasion. Don't admit that it's part of the skin. But I can't help but have my suspicion. Cause I ain't quite as dumb as I seem. right. So there's a big article in the New York Times today, deluged immigration courts where cases stall for years, begin to buckle. And we know that we have the number one court in the country in terms of case level with Judge Brock because of the same issue. And so you've got an administration that has put onto the backs of the court its alternative reality for America. And one of the things that it wants to be, and you heard Obama get up and give that speech about if you vote here, you're an American and you don't have to worry about anybody looking into it. But these globalists see the foreigner, even immigrants from jihad zones, as being Americans. Obama has clearly made statements along these lines, which is an insane. You can't run a country that way. And Nancy Pelosi, remember, in her own crazy, insane so-called leadership, goes down to the border in Texas. This is one of the craziest things that I've ever seen, and said, you know, holds her arms out towards the border and says, come here, Americans. So you've got this cult in the far left, in the Democratic Party, in the upper echelons of the Democratic Party. You've got a cult of people who believe that all individuals around the world are Americans, which doesn't really make any sense, right? They must believe that there's world citizenship for everybody, and therefore, if you come from another country, no matter what your background, no matter what your status, you can walk in and take up citizenship in America immediately because you're already in that status. You're a world citizen. It's a crazy, very, very destructive and ultimately an insane journey into the heart of a live volcano. But fortunately, Obama's leaving. But how much more damage is he going to do before he leaves? Here's Trump on this idea.
They put us in boxes. They separate us by race, by age, by income, by geography, by place of birth. We spend too much time focusing on what divides us. Now is the time to embrace the one thing that truly unites us. You know what that is? America. America. It's America. Because when America is unified, nothing is beyond our reach. I mean that. You're going to see. You're going to see. We're going to have a country that was never so great. You watch, in so many different ways. You hear a lot of talk about how we're becoming a globalized world, but the relationships people value in this country are local. Family, city, state, country, they're local. We'll compete in the world. We want to compete in the world. But we're going to compete in the world where it's a two-way road, not a one-way road. The advantages are going to come back to our country, and they haven't for many, many years. There is no global anthem, no global currency, no certificate of global citizenship. We pledge allegiance to one flag, and that flag is the American flag.
All right, so I agree with that. 649, 650 on the button. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. We'll be right back. And you're gonna find out about this weather anomaly coming. Here's a little of your headlines for you. Shouting match erupts between Clinton and Trump aides at, I think it was at Harvard. Republican strategists taunt CNN Zucker for his attack on Trump. A lot of scrutiny. I'm going to talk about this next hour. Keith Ellison, he's Muslim. He's part of the Nation of Islam, and he's got some radical ties. And this is the one person that they're hoping to put into the head of the Democratic Party. Woman in Saudi Arabia is facing calls to be executed for not wearing a hijab. And in a shock poll, 4 in 10 British Muslims want Sharia law. And it's undoubtedly higher than that because these people want their own law. You know, it's certainly common sense, but it's very dangerous. Angela Merkel, the crazy German leader who brought in over a million Muslims during 1 year, and now there are attacks all across her country. I mean, that would be like infecting yourself with AIDS, you know. Total failure of leadership, and Hollande quitting the French presidential race at 5%. I guess he didn't have a shot, didn't have a chance in hell, as they say. Snowball's chance in hell. Other news, and we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
You gotta be kidding me. Yeah, you going out, yippee-yay, look at Trump carrier stuff and so forth. This is a scam. It's a shell game in the making.
Hey, Frank, let me ask you something. Do you accept my metaphor as Obama as the national maitre d' of the American hospice? Get ready for collapse. You've got to accept lower standards. You can't drill your way out. We can't save carrier, all this stuff. You agree with that kind of leadership?
No, I don't. You know, but then again, I'm not in seeing the big picture in the White House. I mean, there's a reality that hits every president when they get up to the what, because now you see the real story. But you're going on with this. Okay, right now at the moment, he's pandering, or he's been able to step up to the plate to answer his supporters' thing.
Thanks for the call. That was him, not me. All right, so I will respond to the idea of pandering. You know, Obama's a very fatalistic person. The things that are happening had to have happened. There's no stopping them. You've got to accept your lower place in the world. You know, what Frankie and Kathy and all these other people don't understand is Obama came in and didn't just attack America. He raped and pillaged and plundered and desecrated the Democratic Party. Here's Frankie again. Yeah, go ahead.
What happened?
I didn't touch anything. It was on your end.
Oh, geez. Anyway, so what I was saying is, you know, you don't see really the big picture until you get there. Now, you know, on the surface, you're saying, hey, you know, all you people, you got to come up with something else. That may be in some instances true. Times change, Kelly O. You just can't keep making horses and buggy whips and expect any society to continue to expand on that when the rest of the world is rocking and rolling with space travel.
Hold on.
You understand? So that's got this carrier deal.
Hey, listen,
you don't know,
Frankie,
what the story is with that. We don't know what the merits of it is.
Hold on.
You know, what caused
Frankie,
the company to change its mind?
Frankie.
And how much is it going to cost?
Frankie.
It's already known that it's going to cost $7 million package a year for Indiana.
So what?
Oh yeah, let's see the other side.
Hey, listen, why is the only way a socialist or a leftist can win a debate is by shouting over people? You're not even listening to me. We invented.
Were you saying something? I didn't know I was shouting over you. You know, I'm polite about that. I don't interrupt you. I didn't hear you were talking.
Well, and then you spend the rest of the time talking. So in any event, we're running out of time here, but I just want to say, this guy raped and plundered and destroyed your party. You should be mad at Trump, not me. Obama. You should be mad at Obama. He ruined your brand.
No. He's a great man. I mean, when the dust settles, you'll see that he's right.
Right about what? He's been disproved about drilling, you know, energy has been disproved about Carrier. He's going to be disproved about a thousand things in the future. And you're clinging to this guy as he's being shoveled into the ground. I don't get it.
Like I said, the devil's in the details. We'll see. I think I'm going to have the last laugh.
All right. Okay. I'm running out of time. Thanks a lot. We agree on one thing. Obama sure is a devil. I did have some clips for you from the weather, but I will put those on next hour. Thanks for the call. Good call, Frankie. But this guy raped you and exposed your party to every STD in history and some new ones, and you guys are still cheering and clapping. You've got the beaten wife syndrome. You've got the abused child syndrome. And you've been rejected by your own leader, and you don't even realize it. 6:59, we'll be back after a break on the hour. AM Las Cruces, KOBE. All right, so I got a hold of Pete, who used to be in the Marines, and he's supposedly calling in right now to talk about Mad Dog Mattis. He said he's got some stories. Good morning, Pete.
Hey, Kelly, how you doing, buddy?
Not too bad, and folks who listen to the show will recognize Pete. Pete is an attorney in Florida right now, but... he was, after he graduated from law school, went into the Marines and worked as a judge advocate general, JAG, military lawyer. And so anyway, Pete, that was one of the greatest experiences of your life, right?
Absolutely. Loved every minute of it.
All right. And all right. So what were your thoughts when they were talking about bringing in Mad Dog Mattis?
Well, Mattis, when I was in the Marine Corps, he was a very transformative figure in the Marine Corps. He kind of brought, we have old school Marines and new school Marines. He was an old school Marine by all accounts, but he really did some amazing things in his leadership. All over the Marine Corps, specifically in Iraq, he did some very, very important things for the Marines, for the country, and for the effort. But he was definitely, he was definitely the type of Marine who was very gung-ho, very much about, what Marines do. I remember he actually came and spoke at a course I was at called the Basic School. It's a 6-month course every officer has to go through before you go to your specialty school, your MOS school. And he gave us a very similar speech, to a speech that got him in a little bit of trouble. I think I don't know where he was, maybe on the West Coast. He gave a speech to some civilians, and I think in that speech he said something to the effect of, he liked killing. He liked his Marines killing the enemy. It rubbed some people, I think, on the West Coast the wrong way, almost that he took some gratification pleasure out of killing. But what he told us is, he said, if you're here in this room, this big auditorium at TBS, so if you're here and you're not up to the challenge, if you're not a killer, then you need to get out. And he almost gave us the ultimatum that if we weren't prepared to kill the enemy, and, that's what Marines do, kill the enemy. You need to leave. And it was a pretty powerful speech.
Did anybody get up and leave?
No one did. But there were some conversations afterwards I had with people who, I remember one of the guys in my platoon was I think he went to the University of Maryland, very, indoctrinated in a left-wing liberal ideology at his school, and he kind of had some groans, if you will, about how the speech was presented. And I was like, well, listen, why? And that sparked a conversation of, why are you here? why did you pick this branch? Why don't you pick a different branch or, you know, maybe something where you're not going to be, you know, an officer of the line where you may have to be in that situation of killing someone in combat.
Well, that's kind of like an atheist becoming a minister and then, getting up and preaching from the pulpit, even though he doesn't believe in God. So let me ask you this. What is his reputation overall? What is Mattis if you say Mad Dog Mattis to a Marine, what thoughts do they have? What images?
I think most Marines really like him. And I'm talking about, the lower officer ranks, the lower enlisted ranks. I think probably all the enlisted ranks actually love the guy. I mean, his mentality is that, you know, rules of engagement are just hindering us from reaching our objective. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think if you had a frank conversation with him, he'd say, listen, in all the wars we fought up until the Vietnam era, we were carpet bombing cities, we were taking no prisoners. I mean, trench warfare, that is how you win wars. I think that's his philosophy. I think he understands the concepts of he coined the phrase "no better friend, no worse than an enemy" when speaking about Marines.
Yeah.
And he had some Marines in Anbar Province, and he was very much, look, if we have to fight, we got to fight, and we're going to end it. But if we don't have to fight, let's not fight. We're here to make friends and allies as well. I think he really understood that concept. But I think in combat, he would say, why? If these people are trying to kill us, we need to do everything we can to kill them. So I think that'd kind of be more of his philosophy. And again, I don't put words in his mouth. He's definitely more than capable of expressing his views on his own. But I think that's the impression that Marines would get from him, is that he's not a guy who wants to go kill everybody. But he definitely wants to eliminate any type of threat, anyone who's trying to do us harm, which I think is a philosophy he will definitely carry over to ISIS has any idea. Most of those guys know who Mattis is because he's probably taken out 50 of their comrades. They're going to be understanding that their use of civilian shields is probably not going to be very effective. They're going to have to change their strategy quite a bit.
Yeah, here's a quote from him. Find the enemy that wants to end this experiment in American democracy and kill every one of them until they're so sick of the killing that they leave us and our freedoms alone.
Yeah, I think that sounds exactly like him. But I don't want to paint the picture of he's this madman lunatic that wants to kill everybody. He very much understands the concept of building coalitions, understanding that our friends, if we're their friend, they will have no better friend than us. And that's definitely a philosophy that he sticks to. Because obviously, if we're going to win a war anywhere in the Middle East in the future, we're going to need allies over there.
All right. So what changes would you say would be coming to the military now that he's over it that he would have, put in?
I think right now our philosophy is to use a scalpel and not a hammer. I could probably see him using more of a hammer. I'm maybe not large scale ground invasions, but there will definitely be a lot more boots on the ground. There will be a lot more ordnance dropped. It won't be I don't think it will be as selective. And there won't be the red tape, if you will, clearing it through three or four different people or commanders to drop a bomb. It's going to be, hey, if we have a reasonable suspicion there's an enemy in that location, we're taking it out. I think you're going to see a lot more of that. And I think that's a good thing. But the drawback always is that you're going to have collateral damage probably more. And that's going to rub a lot of Americans when we see those images the wrong way.
But, I mean, that's the cost of doing war is collateral damage. That's one of the points that you avoid war until you can't avoid it anymore, right?
Right. I think he's going to his justification will be like, look, we are at war. These people are trying to kill us. And a place like Mosul, These civilians have been there for however long ISIS has, you know, controlled that city, a year and a half, 2 years now. You know, there are refugee camps everywhere. You know, are these people with us or against us? And that's really goes to the Harvest philosophy. If you're with us, you're going to be just fine. If you're against us, you're on the fence, you better make up your mind quick or you're done.
Now, were you introduced to the idea of proportional warfare? You bring to the war the same level of armaments, the same tactics as the enemy is. It is my understanding that politicizing of war has cut down on the effectiveness, kind of like what you were saying earlier.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's that concept of retaliate and force of like kind, which is, I think, a philosophy that he is going to do away with. You know, if someone's shooting at you from a minaret with a sniper rifle, you're just supposed to shoot back to hit it with a Mark 19 or, you know, calling an airstrike on it. I think he's going to do away with that concept. It's clearly that person is trying to kill you. We're going to do everything we can to kill them. I think that those are concepts he's going to work on, and we're going to be a much more, lot less PC, much more let's keep our troops alive, let's crush the enemy and win the war.
And do you think he's going to bring some of these commanders and generals who got frustrated and quit or who were cashiered out of the force? Do you think he's going to bring back kind of an elite force of generals, of these old school generals?
I don't know. He could. I think probably what's going to happen is in the general ranks, there's, you know, just like everything in our country, there's polarization. There are going to be guys who agree with him, guys and gals who agree with him, and guys and gals who don't. And I think you'll probably see a cleaning house of the people who don't agree with him. The people who do agree with him will be the ones who are going to be promoted. I don't know if he's going to bring back some of the former guys, because they're out now and they're, you know, obviously getting a little bit older. They'd be brought back into some type of civilian position. But in the military itself, I think he will have no problem finding people who agree with him. It'll be very clear the people who don't agree with him. So there may be some shakeups in the ranks as well.
And do you think that this is a good move overall? I know the Marines will be enthusiastic about it. He's a 4-star general out of the Marines, but and considered to be maybe the greatest general since Chesty Puller. Would you agree with that?
I think there's some people who hold that belief. I mean, I wouldn't argue with anyone who said that. I mean, he's done extraordinary things, really did some amazing things during his time as different positions as a 4-star and even before. I like it. I mean, I think it's going to be good for our country. It's going to be – it's a very – when Trump did it, I said, boy, this is a very Trump move, and I think that's what's very appealing about Trump to a lot of people. I mean, I like the move. Question is, you know, we may need some people at some point to say, let's rein this in. And I think Mattis is as much a reputation he has. I mean, his call sign is chaos. Okay, so it kind of tells you, you know, that's what his early fellow officers thought they should name him.
I was surprised, Pete, to find out that he didn't get the nickname Mad Dog until he, till a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago when he was in Iraq.
Right, right. They call him the Warrior Monk. I don't think he's ever been married. I don't think he has any children. I mean, his life has been the Marine Corps throwing his troops.
I understand that he carries around with him a copy of Marcus Aurelius, is the old Roman emperor, his thoughts, is this book called The Thoughts of Marcus Aurelius or whatever, that he was extraordinarily well educated and he was self-educated.
Yes, I think he went to the Naval Academy. I could be wrong on that. I mean he's off the charts intelligent, no doubt. I don't think anyone getting to a 4-star general is not something that just happens. That's not a political political move. You've got to really, really be an impressive human being to get to that level. There's no doubt he's very impressive. I just think there's a lot of people out there who kind of are a little bit nervous about his philosophy. But, I mean, I think it's going to be a net positive.
That's good, though. If our enemies are afraid of a new hire in the military, that's probably a good thing. And so what do you think about Petraeus coming in as Secretary of State?
I think that'd be great. I think having Petraeus in there, because Petraeus, you know, he's a very tough guy, but he is also, I think he'd be a great, him and Mattis would complement each other very well. I think that would be a very good team to have. I mean, you know, Trez is equally as tough, but I think he's a little more
political.
A little more political, a little more, you know, I don't want to say he's not gung ho. It's not the right word, but you know, he will take a pause. Where I think, you know, Mattis's philosophy is we have our foot on the throat of the enemy. Let's just go for it. Yeah, he's kind of one of those, but you know, not really. You know, I'm sure he's aware of what's going around, but doesn't really seem to bother him.
Yeah.
So I think having those two together would be a great team and great counsel for President Trump.
Wow, man. Well, anyway, Pete, I know you're busy in your practice back in Florida. Any concluding thoughts?
No, I just I still need $100. I gotta figure out a way to get it to you.
Pete and I had a bet on who was going to win the presidency, and so I told Pete, said I want to pay you $100, and I said, he said, how can I do that? I said, come out here and buy me a meal.
All right, I'll look for a $50 Spirit flight, and we'll go get a $50 steak.
Another poor attorney. Thanks a lot, Pete.
All right, man.
Have a great day. Yeah, you too. Bye. All right, folks. Let's. Here we go. This is to anybody who doesn't like Trump. Fanny, BGs, kiss my Fanny. Be tender with my love. 722 AM Las Cruces AM 1450 523-1450 to call in. And I'm going to spend a little time in the Electoral College because they're making an attack against Trump. And I wanted to throw that out there as kind of an interesting little segue on Friday. We'll be right back.
Like it don't want the love of this man at all. And it's sure been a love time.
It's 7:26, and the question is, what is the Electoral College? And as you know already, the Electoral College is not a school. The Electoral College is an institution that was set up by the founding fathers who were trying to mediate between the impulses of democracy and republicanism. So what does that mean? The impulse of democracy is one person, one vote. And ultimately, mob rule. Now, the impulses of republicanism is to diffuse and mediate power. So the founding fathers wanted some direct democracy, but at the same time, they didn't want a direct election. And I believe in those days, there was about 4 million people in the United States. But here anyway, history.com, what is the Electoral College? And it's coming up in a few days to have the vote. It is the vote of the Electoral College that actually elects the president, not the state's votes, which then the state's votes tell the electors who to vote for.
about something called the Electoral College. But what exactly is this college, and how does it work? Well, it's not a college at all, but a process. It's how Americans elect a president and vice president every 4 years. Who came up with this process? None other than our founding fathers, the framers of the Constitution. Under this system, Americans do not actually vote directly for a president and vice president. Instead, they select a group of people who have pledged to vote for their chosen candidate. These people are known as electors. So why not just vote for the candidate directly? The founding fathers thought that it would be too chaotic and prone to error, and instead designed the Electoral College system. Here's how it works. Each U.S. state gets a different number of electors, equal to the number of that state's U.S. senators, always two, plus its number of U.S. representatives, determined by the size of the state's population. Who are these electors? In most cases, political parties choose them based on party service and loyalty. The vast majority of U.S. states have a winner-take-all system. Whoever wins the most popular votes in that state gets all of the state's electoral votes. Like many compromises, the Electoral College system is not perfect. It's got one major quirk. The candidate who wins the presidency may not be the one who gets the most popular votes. This has happened several times in history. Rutherford B. Hayes in 1876, Benjamin Harrison in 1888, and George W. Bush in 2000. Despite its quirks, the Electoral College has proved to be a solid, lasting compromise and remains one of the many stable foundations laid out by America's founding fathers. Have a burning question?
All right, so here's a little bit from the fight to change the Electoral College.
We lose sight of, though, is that if you had a race based on who had the most votes, period, they'd be running a different race. So there's no way to say that this is the result you would get in a popular vote race. Karl Rove, former deputy chief of staff, great historian of all things politics as well, with us right now. Karl, I mean, Donald Trump does raise a good point that if he wanted to target and run the kind of race that would have garnered the most votes, then sort of you sit in the most populous areas and you run with it, don't you?
Yeah. First of all, he's the fifth American president. John Q. Adams in 1824 is the first. He was missing from that list. But yeah, look, if this were there'd be two results if this were a popular vote majority country. We wouldn't be in Iowa. People would be campaigning in the big Republicans would go to Tarrant County, Texas, Fort Worth, and the suburbs of Houston and Orange County, California. Democrats would go to San Francisco and New York, and a big part of the country would be overlooked. But here's an even more pernicious problem. We would then have a multiplicity of parties, because if it's the popular vote, we've had 14 presidents who've been elected with a plurality of the vote. That is to say, they didn't get 50%. If we were to go to popular vote only, how long would it be that before we'd have runoffs? I mean, Bill Clinton was elected twice, never got 50% of the vote. Woodrow Wilson elected twice, never got 50% of the vote. Abraham Lincoln got elected with 40 some odd percent of the vote, less than Michael Dukakis got in being defeated in 1988. So the two-party system, which has given the American democracy a stability and a continuity that makes us the longest living democracy in the world, would be sorely undermined by a move away from the Electoral College.
You know, though, I wonder why this measure coming as it does in a week, we've had all these protests. I don't think that's just coincidental, obviously, given these protests, and largely by high schoolers in the latest round. You have to wonder who's putting whom up to what and to what end to delegitimize, you know, Donald Trump before he even takes office.
Yeah, absolutely. This happened in 2000. I was on a program last night in Houston with Paul Begala, who to this day doesn't believe that George W. Bush was a legitimately elected president of the United States. I called him a dead ender on Fox News Sunday, which amused Chris Wallace. But yeah, there was a concerted effort after the 2000 election to say Bush's loss of the popular vote caused him to be an illegitimate president.
All right. So there is a movement out there. It's called the Hamilton Electors. And let's get some local news going here. And here's the Bee Gees' Kiss My Fanny for anybody who doesn't like Trump. 7:32 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. And you're listening to KOBE, of course, with Kelly O'Connell, 733 on the button. And we'll be back to carry on with the Electoral College, the challenge to it. We do have a new sponsor for the show. Cafe Go-Go, 1120 Commerce, right across from Sam's Club. They had a big art opening last night. And, so what are some of the dishes there? Grilled strip loin, pesto, fettuccine. Waldorf chicken salad sandwich. Thai chicken wrap, egg salad sandwich. The ultimate smoked turkey sandwich. Check it out. Cafe Go-Go right across the street from Sam's Club on the right past the bank. All right, so we're talking about the Electoral College and attempts to take it over for Hillary. Well, not really for Hillary, for her corpse, if you know what I mean. Check this out.
It's come and gone for voters, but members of the Electoral College cast their ballots in 2 weeks. Some Republican electors are getting flooded with harassing emails and messages, demanding them to vote for Hillary Clinton instead of Donald Trump in a last-ditch effort to block President-elect Trump from taking office. It's just extraordinary. Joining us right now to weigh in, Republican presidential elector from Florida, Susan Moore. Susan, good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good to see you, Maria, and thanks for having me.
Okay, so can you explain the process to us? Can you legally vote against Donald Trump in spite of the fact that he won the state of Florida? Tell us what plays out now in the next couple of weeks.
Well, you know, electors are, at least in Florida, and I can only speak about Florida, but we're pledged. And so I signed a pledge, and I intend to vote for Donald Trump. I suppose if you wanted to write in someone else, I think it would be unlikely that you would be still seated in the Electoral College. I think you would be replaced.
So you, electors made their pledge. They're going to stick to their pledge. But a lot of the electors are saying that they're being overwhelmed with messages asking them to vote against Trump. One from Michigan received death threats. Have you received threatening or harassing emails, first of all?
Well, you know, the volume, I think, is probably harassing enough. You know, a lot of them are belligerent emails and phone calls and text messages. But for the most part, it's just cut and paste kind of emails. A lot of them are the same, where they just ask you to abstain or flip your vote to Hillary. That's not going to happen, especially not in Florida. The great majority of people that were chosen as electors are party faithful, the party loyalists, and I wouldn't flip my vote anyways.
That's just sad.
Yeah.
That's really sad. It's like if somebody breaks up with you and you just keep emailing them over and over again and hope they'll take you back, and it just makes it worse. I respect these people less than.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never been broken up with. But Susan, quick question for you. Are there any cogent arguments that they're trying to make to get you flip? It seems like it's all just hyperbole that they're spewing, and there's no real actual argument that they're making here.
No, and you know, I read the great majority of these emails, and I think I am at about 1,800 right now that I've gotten, which is a bit overwhelming. Most of them are just sort of cut and paste the same sort of language, but, you know, there's not a lot there.
So there's no substance to their arguments?
Not really. And I think a lot of it is just, you know, they'll say, like, I'm begging you, please vote for Hillary because she won the popular vote.
Disgusting. Get some, Frankie, Kathy, get some self-respect here. All right, here's a professor making the case for the Electoral College.
Well, you know, the founding fathers may have created it to forestall any complications, but now a prominent Democratic lawmaker is calling for the end of the Electoral College. That, of course, a reaction to Hillary Clinton's stunning loss to Donald Trump. Democratic California Senator Barbara Boxer, an avid Clinton supporter, yesterday introducing legislation to scrap the venerable voting system, calling it antiquated. Our next guest feels exactly the opposite way, writing an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal titled "The Electoral College is Anything But Outdated," saying, quote, "The Electoral College continues to recognize that Americans vote by state in the same way that they elect the Senate and the House, and the same way that they voted those many years ago to ratify the Constitution. But now there is a national movement to require that electors support the presidential candidate who wins the national popular vote." What about that? Joining us now is the author of that article, Larry Arnn. He's president of Hillsdale College in Michigan, who's joining us from campus. President Arnn, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Let me first start with the petition on change.org. About 4.5 million people have signed that petition calling for an end of the Electoral College. They want the college to anoint Hillary Clinton as president when they meet on December 19th, because she received 1 million more votes than Donald Trump. Why do you say that they are wrong?
Well, those are foolish people, at least in this respect. First of all, just think what the United States of America achieves and has to achieve. It controls a wonderful land going all the way across a continent, and it spread across that land without benefit of colonies. And that's because people can control things in their states and exercise their very important control over the federal government through states. And so it's a shame that Donald Trump didn't get the popular vote. But think what it would be, what a shame it would be if the president could be elected from 10 pockets of population. They'd be like capitals, maybe like in the Hunger Games, and the rest of us would be like colonies, right? So it matters where people live in America, and the whole country gets represented. Another point is now the people who live out in the Midwest and the places that voted for Trump, they have to talk to the people in the cities and vice versa. The election was very close. If you could just get a concentrated interest in 10 populous places, they'd stop talking to the people in the Midwest. And that wouldn't make anybody happy. You know, you'd be one country.
You have a point, because the Founding Fathers saw that because of the different populations and states, Rhode Island, Delaware versus, you know, now Texas or California, that's an issue. I mean, Donald Trump even said in one of his tweets that you're dealing basically with California, New York, and Illinois. But let me show you, because beauty's in the eye of the beholder. This is what he said in 2012 when Mitt Romney lost. I mean, he was slamming the Electoral College. He said, quote, "The Electoral College is a disaster for democracy." And then, of course, after his victory, he says the Electoral College is actually genius in that it brings all states, including the smaller ones, into play.
All right. Well, maybe you got more educated on it. There's a guy by the name of Levi Guerra from Washington State, and this is even the weirdest thing, and I'll come back and tell you about this. Faithless electors. I'm going to tell you about faithless electors in 5-2-3-14-50. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. And it was cold this morning. No doubt about it. And I've got on my phone is telling me 36 degrees. We'll be right back. All right, there is this kind of weird protest that's going on out there, and this teen, I don't understand how a teen becomes an elector, but Electoral College member Levi Guerra from Washington State, 19, from Vancouver, is going to announce that she is joining the ranks of the so-called Hamilton electors, which I'll play a clip for those from you in a minute, but the 538 electors represent the number of senators and congressmen. And so, but it's not what you think, on at least on this instance. She's planning a vote of protest. She wouldn't vote for Clinton. She would turn around and vote for a Republican, but not Donald Trump. So if you can't understand what that's about, I identify with that. Here is the Hamilton electors who claim from support from the Federalist Papers that you cannot elect a tyrant who they claim Donald Trump is. Check it out.
Hi, my name is Brett Schifala, and I'm a member of the Electoral College. There are 538 of us. Since there's been some confusion about us, I want to explain a few things. Our founding fathers spent years thinking about how our system of government should work, and they wrote a constitution that has guided our country for over 200 years. Like all smart architects or engineers, they also designed a fail-safe mechanism, an emergency brake in case something went wrong. This emergency brake is the Electoral College. You may think that the Electoral College is supposed to rubber stamp the winner of the election. That is not the case. In fact, that is the opposite of what the founders intended. They intended for us to subject the winner of the election to exhaustive scrutiny. And if the candidate does not meet our standards, we are expected to elect an alternative. They were worried about the kind of demagogue who had taken control in so many other countries. So the Electoral College was charged with making sure that the president met three important criteria. First, they wanted to make sure that the voters elected a qualified person. Second, they wanted to prevent the election of a charismatic autocrat. Third, the founding fathers feared that a president could be elected who was under the influence of foreign powers. The founders believed that even...
You mean like Barack Obama?
Even if the people failed to realize that their president-elect had compromising ties to foreign countries, the discerning members of the Electoral College could protect the country and choose an alternative president. The Electoral College is our fail-safe mechanism. And no, we've never used it before, but our country has never needed it before. We have always elected experienced statesmen, but this time is different. This is the moment Hamilton and Madison warned us about. This is the emergency they built the Electoral College for.
Donald Trump.
And it is our constitutional duty and
Donald
our moral
J.
responsibility.
Trump. Donald Satan Trump.
Into action. If only
the worst person in history, according to Frankie, a new Hitler.
And Republican electors change their vote. Donald Trump will not have the 270 electoral votes he needs to be president. 37 patriots can save this.
37 country. Patriots. Well, I got a problem for you there, Mr. Schifala, however you pronounce your name. There's a problem, and the problem is that if these people are switching votes away from Hillary, doesn't that make the number higher if they're protesting? So anyway. Faithless electors, members of the Electoral College who, for whatever reason, do not vote for their party's designated candidate. Since the founding of the Electoral College, there have been 157 faithless electors. 71 of these votes were changed because the original candidate died before the day on the Electoral College, which cast its votes on that day. Three votes were not cast at all. The other 82 electoral votes were changed on the personal initiative of the elector. And sometimes they move in large groups, like 23 Virginia electors, massing together in 1836 like a bunch of yaks. And 2004, no elector changed their vote, despite the fact that they claim that Al Gore won. All right, so those are the faithless electors. Now, let's see if I can get some weather for you at 751, 752.
So far this season, regardless of where you live, you felt some cold air so far. In fact, you're probably feeling some right now. I know I woke up on Thursday morning, definitely noticing it was colder outside after that cold front went through. Here's the deal, though. It's about to get much worse. Next week, we're going to give you a couple days notice here. By midweek next week, some of the coldest air of the season, just a huge trough that's going to dig into the U.S. This is going to be some Arctic air. And when you see the temperatures, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So focus especially kind of on the northern plains, all right? So parts of North Dakota. Tuesday morning, you'll be down in the single digits, close to zero. Definitely down sub-zero as far as temperatures go in some of those areas. Wednesday morning, and I'll tell you what, Wednesday in the afternoon, high temperatures might not make it out of the single digits in those spots either.
All right, so coming on is a cold trough, and here's more heavy rain for the southeast, which we should experience some of this.
In the southeast, you know how bad this drought's been over the last couple of months, and you know how nice it was. At points over the last couple of days to just see, smell, hear, feel some rain outside. It seems like it's been a really long time. That's because it has been. I know for a lot of people this came along with severe weather, but the nice thing about the next couple of days is that we've got more rain on tap. And it's going to come in little shots and likely not with all the severe weather that we had. Here's the drought situation right now. You can see just a big old red blob in the southeast. And this is not something that goes away overnight. It's going to take a lot of rain to get rid of it. How much, you ask? We can actually quantify that. Say you take about a four-week chunk of time, okay? It would take about 12 to 15 inches in a lot of these spots in 4 weeks of rain to get rid of that drought. So, look, the drought's not going anywhere anytime soon, but this is definitely a good start. I mean, this is really all you can do is just chip away at it.
They had massive flooding in Louisiana, and they're saying there's a drought there. I don't believe that. Houston, 3 to 5 inches, and Galveston, 5 to 7, San Antonio, 2 to 3 if you're traveling. And so we should see some rain over the weekend. All right, we'll take a break for local weather and be right back. All right, so 7:56 here, and another story about ESPN, and ESPN has lost 1 million viewers in the last 2 months. More, 1.2 million, and they've got, I don't know, they had 99 million a few years ago. Now they're down to 87 million. But I think part of the problem, or according to analysts, an extremely large part of the problem is the turn to leftism on ESPN. A lot of people that Americans, especially obviously American men who are really into sports, are not necessarily super lefties. And when you go to ESPN, the website, you click on it, and a lot of times there's soccer in the main frame, you know, and there's all these stories, and you'll run into football or whatever. But I think it's they're trying to kind of globalize ESPN, if you see what I mean, and they're trying to give coverage to all sports, which I'm sure is a very noble thing. But if on a Sunday I go to ESPN, I want to see football when I open the page. Now, that is either insensitive and selfish and maybe anti, you know, whatever, throwing the PC term there. But people, you know, make decisions based on what they like and what they like. A lot of times what you like comes out of your gut. You know, do you really have to justify if you go to ESPN, why you don't like the page layout? A lot of Americans are not into soccer. So when you open up ESPN, why is soccer dominating a lot of times? So I understand ESPN's trying to be a international site, and it is an international site. But I mean, so anyway, it just seems like a lot of the stuff that ESPN has been up to in the last few years has been far leftism. And if you put your political stuff before your business model, you're going to have a problem. And ESPN could, with their massive contracts that they signed for billions of dollars, could find itself into a circle, like going down the drain. I mean, not enough revenue to prop up the contracts, and they've already gotten rid of Grantland. So 7:59, Kelly O'Connell, thanks for tuning in. Hope you have a great weekend. It's Friday the 2nd, and a little chillier out there, but enjoy yourself over the weekend, and meet you back in 2 days. Ciao. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. And for all of you Trump haters, kiss my fanny, fanny BGs. Ciao. The moment when I have met you, and if you want, I